generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses.
Good afternoon, St. Louis. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Vic says the most Monday-ish Monday ever. Man, no kidding. This is really something.
It's dark out.
Yeah.
Rainy.
It's raining.
Feels like we shouldn't be here. Am I the only one? Hold up your hand. Show of hands. I feel like it's unsafe.
No, I think we should be here.
I knew you'd be
team
the one.
Team player. I'm a team player, boss.
I knew you'd be the narc.
I'm always happy to be in the building.
Man, driving down, like, I don't get too freaked out in storms, and I wouldn't call today storms, but I was driving down around 10 today. I think, Rach, you were driving down the same time, and it was like, okay, I'm a little butt-puckered here, hydroplaning.
Hydroplaning all over the place.
Even in those big-ass tires in that Jeep?
Yeah, man.
Really?
Yeah. I think it's all for show. My Jeep.
You don't think
when you drive like Dave, you can hydroplane it.
I don't know how anything works. There's just a bunch of buttons in my Jeep.
Do we need to have like a session where we all get together and try to figure out what's what?
Yeah, next time I take it to Greg Damon, I just need to let him show me all the...
Have him give you a tutorial. Yeah. He's a Jeep guy. Maybe he'll know everything.
He is Jeep guy.
Yeah. A lot of times, during things will come with a manual, they call it.
Yeah, oh, God. That is. No, I'll take a look at that.
I would never, like, honestly, I would never, ever in a million years, I've done it, and this is why I wouldn't do it again, I would never open a manual and try to figure out anything.
Why?
Because I don't speak that language. I don't have it. I don't have it in me.
Dave, you're a lawyer.
it's a picture book. It's got picture.
Not anymore.
It shows you the picture of the thing, and then it says this is what it does.
No, oh, no.
This is what the pitch does.
No, no, no.
I should ask the Google machine. What's this button do?
Speaking of manuals, Andrew's going to send off for a 1974 yo-yo manual. Mm-hmm. I gave he and Rachel vintage 1970s yo-yos, still in the packaging. And they pretty much ripped those open pretty quick. And then we did a really funny video of the two of the guys...
yo-yoing.
Getting to refamiliarizing yourself with the yo-yo.
Mm-hmm. Yo-ing.
Very funny.
I say yo-ing because we didn't do a lot of the second. We did a lot of the first yo.
It got a lot of the walk the dog poses. I looked at the video.
Second yo was a little tougher.
Yeah.
But we nailed the first one.
So where can they check that out, Rach?
Instagram, Dave Glover Show, and Facebook, Dave Glover Show.
Kev, were you tarps off at 14 and under this weekend?
No, no. A, nobody needs to see that. B, I don't want to steal thunder because that was awesome.
It's pretty great.
That's great because it just happened, right? It wasn't scripted. It wasn't like everybody decided to. These group of college dudes decided to have some fun at a ball game, and they recruited other people and... Turned out it was like the perfect storm of a really good, entertaining game that had a great ending.
Yes.
Rain delays, you know, like it had all this stuff and it had that great spirit. And this is not a prediction of what's going to come. But when you're playing well, when things are good, this is the kind of fun stuff that happens.
Yeah.
Right. Like remember Happy Flight and the Rally Squirrel and all that. That's all different. That was the second half of a magical run. This is not that yet. But it's the kind of stuff that happens when you're going good,
mm-hmm.
when you're fun.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good. I think that was a great weekend. I think having that kind of, who knows how long that momentum is going to last, but it's a mm-hmm. great thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Kev texted me when it was happening and said, hey, are you into this?
Are you annoyed?
I said, no, I'm way into it. I said, it's going to have a shelf life, right? I mean.
Unless it just becomes unless the team keeps playing well and it's a part of that, right?
Or if it becomes like a Sunday thing.
Right, right.
You know, like right. I think doing it at every game would wear pretty thin.
Yeah.
But if you did it like on a certain day or something, I think it would be fantastic.
But how great is it to hear just like when you're watching a baseball game and it's not just everybody waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
But they're doing chants and, you know, they're making noise constantly trying to, you know, I mean, again, you're right. It's hard to maintain that kind of thing for a long period of time. But we should encourage that kind of stuff because the team loved it.
Yes.
The players loved it. Ollie went and bought tickets so that the guys could come the next couple of days.
I literally teared up on the news when they were showing the guys from the team in the clubhouse with the Cardinals.
How great is that?
And some of the Cardinals, like Mason and Victor, were taking their shirts off.
Yeah, they were doing the tarps off. Yep.
Did you guys see it?
Yeah, I feel kind of bad because I had just, like, literally, like, the day before this happened and was this, like, fun moment that everybody loved, I was thinking about how annoying and upsetting I find it when people take their shirts off at baseball games. Because, like, every time you go to a Cardinals game up on the Jumbotron or whatever, you will see a few guys, like, whip their shirts off or whatever, or, you know, a bunch of kids take their shirts off or whatever, and it's like, that really annoys me. And so then it was like, the most magical moment of all time is 500 people all took their shirts off at a baseball game. I'm like, all right, I guess it's just me.
Well, obviously it's that, like, that's the calling card, but it was more than that.
Yeah, it was an organic rallying moment that was fun for everybody, and then the team ended up winning behind it. Of course.
Right.
I do wonder if anybody would have cared if the team had lost like 11-0.
No, you're right. It might not. It might not have taken off, you know? I mean, because part of what helped it take off after the fact was that the manager mentioned how much fun it was, and you know, if you lose, you don't necessarily have that same focus because you know, you just don't feel the same positive energy.
And it was fun. I feel softer about 100 guys taking their shirts off than I do about like
nice
seven. You know what I mean? We have 100 guys do it up in the, then it's the whole section. It's like, oh, man, that's fun. They're doing a fun
stringing
thing.
Stringing them together.
But if it's like seven, I'm like, put your shirts back on, Jack.
How many shirtless guys need to be soft on them?
Like, you know, I'll get a little softer for, like, you know, 50, 60.
Yeah, sure. I offered to leave. I offered to shut the show down. Rach heard it. I have another baseball thing for you, Kev.
Yeah.
A guy reached out to me, rather than you, I'm not sure why, but sent me an email, and here's the long and short of it. His kid is 12. He says, I'm a union guy, so I do okay, but I'm not rich, and my 12-year-old is swinging a $400 bat and wears a $300 glove, and I feel kind of stupid that he didn't have nice things when he was a kid. He wants his kid to have everything that he can give him, but he's asking you what your advice is about that and how much worse it will get in the future.
It gets worse, but the nice thing is the older you get, the less often you need those things, right? When you're a kid, you need a new glove every couple years, you know, every year, maybe two. I mean, like, no, probably not every year, but, you know, if you're going to get an appropriate glove for your body size and your hand size, yeah, you do need to get more. But, like, once you're high school age, you could probably use the same glove as long as you take care of it. You could use it for 4, 5, 6 years, depending on your position and all that. I mean, it gets better in that regard, but the bat thing is not going to get better. I mean, it's, you know, they do eventually wear out over time. They lose their pop. But yeah, you can get multiple years out of a bat, though. But again, when you're young, you're changing bats every other year or so, you know. So he's 12 now. He's probably swinging a really light drop 8, drop 10. Well, in 2 years, he's going to be swinging the same bat that high school players swing. So you're going to have to change bats almost every year when they're young because the bat restrictions change.
It's very detailed, accurate response.
So as you get older, it's not that it goes away, but it's a little easier to manage. Like once you're grown into, okay, now I'm swinging the same size bat as a high school or college player, 32, 33, 34-inch bat. Well, now there's less urgency all the time.
What about one more baseball thing? Pete Crow Armstrong.
Oh, boy.
For those who are unaware, I wasn't aware until today.
Yeah.
And I saw it on TikTok, and I thought it was probably fake.
Mm-mm.
And it's not. So tell the people what Pete Crow did.
Well, so the White Sox and Cubs are playing this weekend on the south side of Chicago. And there's it's a great rivalry. The fans get into it. And White Sox fans are known for being extra, you know, when they get their opportunity. This was just a lady who was – they have a bar area in the outfield, in right field, like right center field, where, like – they can see out to the field. It's actually below the top of the fence. Like you're actually below ground and you're, you know, from the waist up, you can see from their field level, basically. So PCA is out there and this lady is just giving it to him. You suck, all this stuff. I mean, I don't know for sure, but they're in a bar. She appears to probably had a few.
She was at her engagement party.
Okay. So her engagement. And she was giving it to him like, you suck. And really, and his response was probably more than he will want it to be when he gets his punishment.
Yeah, he invited her to engage in an act.
Yeah.
called her an effing B.
Yeah. You can do this to me and you are this. And the craziness to me is that the way this is blowing up online is you've got a lot of people like, well, good, she started it, she deserves it. Like, no. No, the professional athlete should act like a professional. If a fan is in your head, you are weak.
Hmm.
The end. Hmm. If a fan gets in your head, at least in that moment, you are weak. It should mean nothing to you. Nothing. What can that fan say that changes anything about your life? Now, if they cross a line, get into family stuff, threats, racial jokes, religious jokes, anything, they cross that line, you go get security and you have that person removed. You don't start engaging back with them. You're supposed to be a professional. Those are customers. And I don't think anybody should worry about whether that customer is offended by that line. That's not the point. That's now broadcast for the whole world to see. And there are potential customers that see those kinds of things, and it reflects badly on the business of the Cubs baseball, of Major League Baseball. These are supposed to be the confident, cocky, like alpha male professional athletes. So why is a fan getting in your head? Why do you even care what they say? Again, unless they cross those kinds of lines, in which case the people around them probably don't want that person there anyway. So there's a process. You don't get to just subvert that process because they made you mad. You don't get to get in your feelings and curse someone out because they told you you suck. It's a sporting event. You're going to get heckled sometimes. And if someone's over the top, you have them removed. When you respond in kind, you are weak. It should not get in your head as a professional athlete.
What do you guys think?
I mean, I think that's a great way of putting it.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree.
When Wheel says, like, what is it that they can say that's really going to ruin your day like that? Like, Dave, didn't you say she just said, like, you suck? Like, that was,
I mean,
as
we
much
don't know about the
said.
Whole thing. We saw one clip.
Right.
It could have been going on for a long time, and it could be more than that. And it doesn't change anything. If you're that upset, if it's that bad, if it's inappropriate, then you go to security. You go to the umpires. You got to say, hey, we need to get security out to there. This person needs to go. This person's over the top.
So, Wheels, you're saying it's their duty as a professional athlete to rise above the situation.
Well,
it's just part of the job.
It is. Yeah. You don't have to do that. I mean, it's not a physical confrontation, but we've seen it. Andrew and I were talking about it. DK Metcalf of the Steelers got mad at a fan and swung at him.
Yeah.
And he got a 2-game suspension for it, which in baseball would be the equivalent of a 20-game suspension as far as the percentage of the season that he was forced to miss and the percentage of his paycheck that he was forced to miss. You can't let those voices outside the field bother you.
It's like when Vic is heckling me and telling me that I'm a boomer.
Yeah.
I could have Andrew ban him, but no. I let it go off my back because I'm a pro.
And I would make this statement, too, for almost all of us. If someone who doesn't know you insults you in a way where it's just ridiculous, what difference does it make?
Mm-hmm.
I'm barring someone threatening you or getting up in your physical space, you know, things like that. If they're just yelling at you, who cares? What? You could, if you make a joke about my mom, you know why I don't care? Because I know it's, you don't know my mom. It's not true. It's not a real thing. So why do I care? You're making something. You're literally just making a thing up.
Are you like this in real life, or did you get mad when people heckled you?
No, I got heckled all the time. I didn't care. I mean, I didn't play enough for it to be real. But yeah, I mean, it happened quite a bit. And it was, you know, when you're playing on college campuses, you're going to get drunken college guys that are going to give you a hard time. And it's fine. You play along with it, if anything, because then it shuts them down. If you play along with it, they stop.
Back, DGS and KMOX 124. Going to get you through this gloomy day right up to the storms tonight. Mitch is with us. Mitch says, what are the glasses for, Dave? You don't usually wear them. Mitch, these are my signature Oprah Winfrey readers, which as you get older, you just need them. And there's like an arm's length ability to read right? Like, if I don't have my glasses and I'm looking at my show prep and I hold it up here, I can't see anything. I can barely get it far enough away from me, as everyone my age knows, to read it. And that's where Oprah comes in.
Did Mitch, as a recently minted sophomore in college, really ask what glasses are for? Mitch! What are the glasses for? It's to contain my laser vision.
That would be cool. Rach, I'm dying to know what your deal is with ceiling fans.
So I turned on a bunch of the ceiling fans in the apartment over the weekend because it was hot.
Yeah.
I just don't trust those. I always feel like, dude, when they go,
I think I know what you mean.
They go at their highest speed, yeah. It's like, this thing is going to fall from the ceiling. Yeah, and right. I have felt like that every place I've lived. It's not like just one errant fan is making me feel like this. It's every time they're on the high speed, I just feel nervous. I don't like it.
It's great. I get it.
Have they ever fallen off like there?
No.
But it feels like
it's going to.
Yeah, it feels like they're not meant to be at the highest speed.
Yeah, if it's like a slow one, mm-hmm. Fine. Is it doing anything? No.
Like, it's teaching you a lesson. Like, when you put it on the high speed, it's like, oh, okay, if you want to live.
You want to see how fast I can go?
If you want to live with this hubris.
And whenever you spend the night with someone, like in their guest bedroom, it's always like one from the 70s with those glass things, mm-hmm. and they just like click it and click it and click it and click it and click it. And you're like, oh.
Okay, here's some more of my beef with the ceiling fans. Whenever you want to turn off the light but keep the fan on,
and
you got
impossible.
The two cords, just give up. Just give up.
I have a fan in my life, a ceiling fan, where when you pull down the chain, it feels like you have to like really pull on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother layer because that feels like you're ripping the fan down on you.
Mm. I don't like sleeping with them like above the bed.
Just can't relax.
Keep it to yourself, Kevin.
I'm trying.
What's wrong?
Well, like none of these things that are ever going to happen.
They could
they
happen.
They have happened.
They are literally built to go high speed for extended periods of time. Like they're constructed so that that is safe.
That's my point. I don't think they are.
Then why does it feel so unsafe?
I don't know why it feels that way. I just know that it isn't.
Maybe the swaying and shaking and stuff is kind of like buildings. How when you get up on like the 100th floor of a building, it starts like kind of swaying, and that's by design.
I mean, your car shakes and bounces and stuff when you're driving because you're driving.
Well, yeah, that's because I'm driving like a crazy person.
But it's built to handle it.
I shouldn't be in charge of a ceiling fan either. Shouldn't be driving a ceiling fan anymore than I should be driving a car.
Poor Mitch didn't even know how glasses work. Welcome back, guys. DJS on KMOX. Rainy, gloomy Monday, I think. Tomorrow, we're supposed to have more bad weather. And then on Wednesday, some rain as well. Dave Murray will be with us, as always, a couple of hours from now. He'd be with us right now if it were severe, but they're not expecting that. Although tonight could kind of head that direction. So we will keep you updated, as we always do here on KMOX. If tonight we need to go into Storm Center, we will do that. You know what I was thinking about? Get ready. This is like a old man thing, which I do more and more because I'm getting older. But, Kev, I'm just thinking about, and I think this goes for you too as well. I think you were probably the last generally very well-behaved students. And I don't mean to indict every elementary, junior high, and high school student out there. But just from what I see and what I kind of pick up from teacher friends of mine, the compliance and the respect and the yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir, has just kind of gone away. And I see the way people act at graduations now and doing stupid dances and making ass of themselves and, you know, just on and on and on and on. And I'm not asking for anything. I'm just saying that whatever the generation that was dealing with us, parents and teachers, whatever they did worked, right? I mean, like, I remember seeing kids act up in school and just being like, oh, my God, mm-hmm. like, what's wrong with that kid? Does he know what's going to happen to him?
Well, because you knew that if you acted up, your parents would punish you.
100%.
And I think that's a big issue in schools today, are the teachers feel like there's not much they can do. And then when they do try to discipline or create consequences, oftentimes the parent will side with the child instead of siding with the other authority figure.
Yes. Yep.
So, I mean, I don't blame the children. I mean, once you get into like high school, sure. But like kids are only going to get away with what you let them get away with.
Good point.
I think kids like boundaries.
It's a good point.
I think if you're consistent with them, like most kids are going to do the right thing and behave themselves. But if it's inconsistent parenting, or the parenting is asking the teachers to do most of the parenting, which I think happens a lot, you can't be surprised when you get results like this.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Because this is all anecdotal, right? But I see on TikTok a lot, teachers will say things like, yeah, I expect the kids to be taught such and such at home. And then the parents will fight back and say, well, it's your job. It's your job to teach my kid everything. And no, it's their job to guide your child through their educational journey. But like the idea that you just send them to school and the school takes care of it all, that's crazy.
Yeah.
It's not accurate.
I agree.
I think a lot of it is the online stuff. Like you see things and you're like, oh, that would be funny. We can do that. And they repeat it.
Oh, as far as like acting up.
I think a lot of the behavior can be that way. I mean, we were bad too at times. I mean,
yeah,
went to
we
small Catholic schools. I mean, we made a 70-year-old nun cry. We were so terrible. You know, I mean, that's not a brag. I feel bad about it like now, but we were fifth graders and we were idiots and we didn't know any better.
But if your parents would have found out about that,
oh, they did, and we got in a lot of trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
I see time and time again teachers complaining about the fact that they try to bring a problem to the parents and the parents just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
I mean, if another adult who's in a position of authority comes to you and says your child is misbehaving, they're not making it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's no incentive. They don't want to make it up. They don't want any nonsense. If they're coming to you and saying there's a problem, it's because there's probably something that you need to work on with your kid.
Uh-huh. I need to correct the record on something. I like to think of myself, I fancy myself as being pretty intellectually confident. And I think a part of that is being able to admit when you were wrong. And I need to admit I was wrong. The other day when I was pretty much bragging about the fact that I had called what Trump was going to do with Iran and what he was going to do with Taiwan and China and all that. And I made the statement that Donald Trump was asked whether he would defend China. And he said, I don't want to answer that.
You mean
and
Taiwan?
Taiwan, I'm sorry. And I said, that's different than other presidents because we've always had like a pact, not a NATO pact, but a pact that we would defend them. And Donald Trump is backing off. And a very respectful listener emailed me and said, hey, that's not really right. It's called strategic ambiguity. And we've had that for decades where we simply don't have that conversation. I didn't know that. I stand corrected. I learned something. And there you go. So.
It's nice.
So don't always listen to what I say. Sometimes I get a little bit out over my skis. Kev, I want you to talk about Mike Johnson. This was really interesting.
Okay. I'm going to work hard to keep myself from saying bad words. Because
don't go Pete Crow Armstrong.
No. Well, I mean, in this case, Mike Johnson probably deserves those kinds of words. But he stood in a podium and made a case on camera that people in Congress should be allowed to continue insider trading on the stock market because they haven't gotten a raise since 2009 and the cost of living is going up.
He said it out loud.
And that now for those that don't know, they make $176,000 a year, which, okay, $176,000 now with inflation and cost is not what it was in 2009. We all agree with that. But why should that give you permission to use information that only you can have because you're regulating these businesses and industries to make tens of millions of dollars?
Can anyone who makes less than $174,000 a year,
I mean, if you can't get by at $176,000 a year, you should go work somewhere else and not be in Congress.
Yeah.
You don't get to tell us we should be allowed to insider trade to use information that is not public, something that the rest of us will go to jail for. I mean, Martha Stewart went to jail for insider trading. Martha Stewart, a harmless person who did something really stupid, got in real trouble. And the argument from the leader of the majority in Congress, in the House of Representatives, is saying they should be allowed to be engage in that because they're $176,000 a year is not enough. And again, great. If that's not enough for your lifestyle, go do something else.
Yeah.
Don't run for office.
Right.
I'm living on a lot less than $179,000 a year. So are they saying that $175,000, whatever it is, that's not enough money to live? Not a living wage?
His argument was, without these allowances, we won't get the kind of people we need, the quality.
What does that mean?
Well, this is the problem. We don't have anybody good now. You're all a bunch of sellouts. Yeah, nobody's fighting
quality,
for us.
What are they talking about?
Right.
He should be forced to explain exactly what he means.
Yeah,
by
good point.
So are you saying unless you have an Ivy League education, you're not good enough to serve in Congress? Unless you started rich, you're not good enough to serve in Congress?
Yeah.
Like, is that what you're saying? Because that's what it sounds like you're saying.
If $176,000 a year plus, by the way, the best medical coverage that money can buy.
And
the best, and it's for life.
For the rest of your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you stay on this trajectory, you're going to have less qualified people who are willing to make the extreme sacrifice to run for Congress. Kiss my ass.
Yes. And this is a total bipartisan kiss my ass
because
Democrats are doing this too. It doesn't matter. This ain't one party.
Yeah.
This is everybody doing this.
Throw them all in the trash. Seriously.
Yeah.
The extreme. I'm making an extreme sacrifice, so I need to be able to trade on insider information. You don't understand what it's like. I only make 200 grand a year,
and I work
100 days a year.
Don't even work.
They spend tens of millions of dollars to get this job.
Yes.
There are obviously reasons other than the salary.
I mean, this is the thing. I want to be clear that I want to be as specific as I can. A large percentage of the people that hold office in Congress right now would be nothing if they weren't Congress people. As far as success and money, they wouldn't be big entrepreneurs. They're not sacrificing billion-dollar businesses to run for office.
No,
they get that power and they get that wealth by being in Congress and doing the whole insider trading and taking money from people so that they will support your campaign and you'll support them. Like, if you were that talented and gifted, you wouldn't be doing this to begin with, because there are more ways to make more money when you're not doing this.
Did you see that President Trump released his finances and he was fined $200 because he released them late?
Yeah.
But it shows that he has made billions, and that he's made hundreds of millions by trading on the stock market. And here's just an example of what he did. Palantir, the tech company.
Oh, Palantir, yeah.
Palantir, I'm sorry. He bought their stock, millions worth.
Yeah.
The very next day, he talked about them from the Oval Office. The stock went up, and the very next day after that, he sold it.
What we call that is a pump and dump.
Yes, it is. I'm very uncomfortable with
that. And we're
okay
with this, I guess.
It must be legal because he disclosed it.
Or nobody is willing to enforce any ethics rules. It may not be illegal, right? They have rules about ethics, but I don't know the difference.
But you know what? I mean, as Bates pointed out, I'm a lawyer. If it's not illegal, it friggin' should be illegal for the most powerful man in the world who knows everything. He's fond of saying, you know who knows that? One person in the world knows that. I know that. You shouldn't be able to do that. And I'm just going to say it. If you are able to do it, your character should prevent you from it.
That's a good point. But if we had a reasonable body representing our interests, and again, I always say this because it's true. That's partly on us because we don't elect people that will look out for us. We elect people on ideology rather than whether or not they'll actually work for us. You could easily pass a law that says no elected officials, including the president of the United States, can actively trade while they're in office. It has to go into a trust managed by a third party. You have no input, no touch on it, no nothing.
Didn't they do that some time ago and then they kind of quietly reversed it?
I have one more thing to say about the $174,000 base salary. That puts a congressperson in the top 10% of American earners.
It's plenty.
Median household income is $83,730. So you're making $100,000 above the median household income. And you're telling me you also get a pension after 5 years.
Yep.
You get your free federal health benefits.
Yep.
Get allowances for travel, for office expenses. You get paid during your recess that you get to take 500 times a year. You're telling me that's not enough because you're such a quality person. If we can't retain these folks, we will have nothing left. We should be a lot angrier at these people than we are. They are all jokes.
Yep. And again, there are individuals who don't do these things. And we can pat them on the back and say, good for you. But there are not enough of them to say we have to stop doing this because it's wrong.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX. One more thing about politics, and at least I'll leave it alone. I do not pretend to understand the redistricting and the gerrymandering. I've not read the Supreme Court case that said it's now okay to do it, even if you racially discriminate. And all the Republican states are doing it, and they're calling emergencies, and we can't have this election because we have to redraw everything so that black people can't elect black people. Even if that's, again, sort of like the president doing the insider trading stuff, even if that's legal, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? How can it be more important to get your person in than to allow black people to have any meaningful say in our government? Am I just being Pollyannish?
Or just any people? I mean, because, yeah, there are some states where these redistricts are about racial pockets and things like that. Some are not. They're just entirely about making sure it goes the right color, red or blue. I mean, yes, it is specifically affecting those groups of people in those particular states. But it's happening all over the place, even where it's not based on the race of the voter, where it's just based on we want more red districts or we want more blue districts. Like, yeah, you hit it, Dave. Winning matters more. That's the only thing that matters in politics right now is winning. Honesty doesn't matter. Working for the people doesn't matter. Winning is all that matters.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times we can be a little naive because we look at the United States and we have this like idea of what we were taught in school of what the United States is, and it's all men are created equal and everyone has an opportunity. And, you know, that's what this place is all about, right? Is democracy. I really don't think anyone in office actually cares about that. I think it's just a nice little facade that they put on and it gets us feeling good whenever the time is right. But like in general, Wheels is completely correct. It's just about winning. It's just about enriching themselves, staying in office, collecting as much money for as long as they possibly can. This idea that we have of the United States, which keeps the United States going, is pretty much irrelevant to the people actually running the country.
Do you guys buy at all the theory that it's basically always been this way, but it's just out in the open now? And part of that is technology and 24-hour news coverage and social media and all these different, like, these things were always going on. We just didn't know it.
Well, I'll say this. We didn't know it during most of my life.
Right.
And we probably could have known it, but the way that the media covered the government was different. You pretty much had to go watch C-SPAN, which only the biggest dorks in the world were going to do. No 24/7, no right. CNN, blah, blah, right. blah, blah, blah. But I'll say this, and maybe I'm just being stupid and I'm just naive and uninformed, but things seemed better before we knew everything. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's just that things seem worse now that we see the shining being made.
I guess it's what happens when you lift up the rock and look underneath.
But I was okay with them doing what they needed to do, and things seemed to run better, and life seemed better. I don't know.
Well, I mean, things like costs, like day-to-day cost of living was better. And it wasn't even that long ago that it was significantly better.